This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The New York Times first wrote about racial profiling in the 1960s, but still the practice didn't get much public attention. In fact, over the next 30-some years, the Times wrote about it only three more times. But by 1999, the New York Times was writing an average of three articles a week on racial profiling. Now, that was more than enough to concern lawmakers in North Carolina. They passed a law requiring police officers to keep track of their traffic stops and note the race of the people they pull over. More than 10 years later and 13 million traffic stops later, experts have analyzed the data, and though they suspected racial profiling existed, they were nonetheless troubled by the findings. Frank Baumgartner is a professor of political science at UNC Chapel Hill. He analyzed the traffic stop data and joins us in the studio today. Frank Baumgartner, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Also, James E. Williams is here. He's a public defender in Orange County. And he leads the North Carolina Advocates for Justice Task Force on Racial and Ethnic Bias. James, thank you for being here as well.
Thanks, Frank. It's good to be here.
So, Frank, tell us about the data, you know, what you had to go through. What was it?
Well, it was 13 million observations, the most complicated data set I've ever looked at. And I've been doing this for 25 years. But it was very useful. We were able to look at every time a police officer pulled anybody over, and we knew why they pulled them over, whether it was for speeding, for running a stoplight, for expired registration or something like that, whether it was for driving while impaired. And then we knew what happened. About 2% of the people had their car searched after they were pulled over, and we could compare who got searched, who got arrested, who got a ticket, who got a verbal warning, and who was let go with no consequence.
Now, most of those, what you mentioned, were observable violations, speeding, running red lights, something. Were there also sort of random stops or stops on some other kinds of suspicion included in that data?
There could have been, yeah. Any time a police officer pulled anybody over is included in our data set. And so that might have been called a safe movement violation. Mm-hmm. The police officer might determine that he wants to pull somebody over. But there are 10 reasons why they could potentially record on that form why they pulled the person over.
Could be called an investigative stop. That's one of the stops that's included in those 10 areas.
All right. So let's talk about what you found now, because, as we said, the race of the individual pulled over was noted in this. And so what did you find? What are the most notable findings here?
Well, let me say first that it is remarkable that North Carolina was the first state to mandate the collection of these data. The other remarkable thing was no one ever analyzed it. It was collected, and until we got it.
And it was a deliberate attempt to recognition that profiling might be a very serious problem. And it wasn't just they were not just adding to the paperwork. They said, we want to know about.
The legislature passed the law requiring the state to collect the data.
In fact, the original name of the bill was a bill to address racial profiling, if I'm not mistaken. Yes.
So anyway, we looked at every traffic stop. So it's a little bit more complicated than the way we analyzed it, but we ignored small categories. So we have white, black, and Hispanics. Whites in 2000 are 68% of the population. Blacks are 22%. Hispanics are 8%. If you look at all the traffic stops, well, blacks are 21.5% of the population. They're 30% of the stops. And if you go by the various reasons for the stops, for example, vehicle equipment, so that's the burnout taillight, blacks are 37% of those stops. If you look at vehicle regulatory stops, I think that's the expired ticket. Now, that's 38% for blacks. If you look at driving while impaired, it's more likely to be it's less likely to be blacks. It's only 21% mm-hmm. blacks. So looking at these reasons why people were stopped, we could see some differences. But the most important differences are what happens after you get stopped. There was about almost 500,000 people were searched, had their car searched. Overall, well, for whites, it's 2.7% of the time that a white person is stopped, his car is searched. But for blacks, it's 4.8%. And for Hispanics, it's 5.4. And so those are the ratios that we looked at. So what that adds up to is a black person who's stopped by a police officer in the state of North Carolina, if from 2000 to 2011 is 77% more likely to be searched. And an Hispanic is 96% more likely to have their car searched than a white when pulled over by a police officer. We can go into endless detail. There's 13 million observations here. Right. We can cut the data in many ways, but that's the most important difference that we found.
Well, that's pretty significant, James. And the fact is, because other states haven't been doing this and because our state data hasn't been analyzed until now, there's no real comparison to make, I guess.
Well, I think there are some things. I think the U.S. Department of Justice and the Bureau of Justice Statistics and other groups have done some nationwide analysis of data that's available, and I think it's fairly consistent that in a lot of states, it is, you know, African Americans and people of color are about twice as likely to be searched as opposed to whites. Now, other states have, in fact, within a few months of North Carolina passing its statute, other states did pass statutes requiring the collection of data. North Carolina was the first, but a number of states have since done the same thing so that there is data to compare now. And one thing, there was one instance where North Carolina did do some analysis of the data, but it was only the data for highway patrol stops in about 2004. Some professors at North Carolina State University did an analysis of the highway patrol traffic stops data, but no one, to my knowledge, has ever analyzed the data that has been collected from all law enforcement entities over this, more than a decade now that this data has been required to be collected.
And what do you make of that? Just the finding that you're 77% more likely if you're black and 98%, did you 96. Say more? 96% more likely if you're Hispanic to be searched on that stop than whites.
Well, I mean, obviously, we hear anecdotally, and by we, I mean people within the criminal justice system, lawyers, community leaders, civil rights advocates, we hear from various communities that people feel that they are being stopped because of their race. And when you look at these raw numbers, it is troubling. Within our criminal justice system, police are authorized to stop motorists for certain types of behavior, but they are not allowed to stop people based upon race. And there's this sense that, when you look at numbers where the figures are this disparate, that to some extent, the people are being stopped based upon race, and there's a projection or a suspicion that criminality is afoot simply based upon skin color as opposed to probable cause or reasonable suspicion.
And that gets us to another fact in the data itself. Frank, there's no real indication about why an officer may have searched somebody and not somebody else. That's not part of the raw data, is it?
No, it's not part of the data. That is something that would be the next step in this. I mean, it could very well be that minorities drive cars with broken out headlights more than white people do, and that the police officers are using only the facts to pull these people over
for the stop.
But then the frisk,
the search, then is another question. Why did you search this?
And we don't know that, and that is the reason why our tone here in bringing this report to the public and to government officials within the state has been to say, this indicates that there's something more to look into. We're not suggesting that we have proof positive of certainly not explicit bias, by any police officer within the state. We're not saying that. What we're saying is that the numbers, 77%, 96% greater likelihood of being searched, treated differently based on race, merits further investigation by an official commission that would include people from the Justice Department and the Attorney General's office.
Well, we're talking about racial profiling on the show today. We're looking at the analysis of 10 years of data on traffic stops collected in North Carolina. Well, now let's talk about the effect that this has on individuals and communities that are targeted by police. Nia Wilson joins us. She is the executive director of Spirit House, a nonprofit that encourages social activism among youth. She also co-created a play called Collective Sun, which includes a scene on the impact of racial profiling. Nia, welcome back to the program. Good to talk with you.
Hi, Frank. Good to talk to you, too.
Tell us about this scene in your play.
Collective Sun is a play that we've been working on for over 5 years. And in doing our research for the play, we've talked to and interviewed a lot of people who have had different encounters with the police department. And we have a scene that's called Riding, and it's about what it feels like to be in the car. In this case, it's the partner of someone who is stopped at least 10 times within a month. And the scene goes through what it feels like to be in the car, how angry the young woman is about seeing this person who she loves being disempowered in that moment, and also the effects that it has on their relationship. One of the things that I think doesn't get talked about, the data is wonderful, but one of the things that doesn't get talked about is the impact that these things have not just on the individual, but on families and on the community. So when you're stopped a number of times, you're angry. You know why you're being stopped, why you're being targeted, why you're being searched. And there certainly isn't anything that you can do with that anger when a police officer is in front of you. But it has to go somewhere. And so oftentimes it gets taken out on the people that we love. And so it affects our relationships, it affects our family, it affects our community in a lot larger way than what actually you can actually figure out just by looking at numbers.
And yeah, James Williams, so we talk about these effects. These are the kinds of things that a playwright like Nia would research and embody when she puts together a play. It's not coming out of her head. This is an experience. And yet you would agree, I think, with Frank, that there's you're not saying in this data that there's some intentional form of racism at play here, but there is something to examine, something further to examine here.
Well, I think I agree with Frank that what we are saying is that the data that we have gathered, and we actually did gather data not just on on traffic stops, but also criminal justice data, people incarcerated in the Department of Correction. And what we have found is that the disproportionality as it relates to race is disturbing enough and significant enough that we do need an official body to do further analysis and study and to see if there are steps that can be taken to address any unwarranted disproportionality within our criminal justice system.
Have you seen the kinds of effects that Nia is talking about, ripple effects on individuals, relationships, and within the community?
I certainly have. I mean, I've talked to individuals who, based upon their account of what happened to them, that feel that they have been violated, targeted, simply because of their race. And it's a painful experience to go through time and time and time again in a society where, in theory, we're all equal. We believe in equity and fairness. And certainly this type of behavior is not something that is officially condoned. And so I have spoken with a number of individuals who have been pained by the experience of having, as they describe it, been racially profiled.
So whatever the intent, there is this feeling, particularly, and the numbers bear out that there is a disproportionate number of people being pulled over. And Nia, as you point out, and James just suggested, it's not just once; it happens repeatedly for particular individuals.
Right. I mean, if you spend some time in certain neighborhoods or even with certain young people, because it also has to do with age, it has to do with class. You will see that they are stopped several times. It's not just one. That this young man, his name was known. He knew the police officer who continually stopped him and never found anything. He was not necessarily being charged, but they were always looking. They were always looking and hoping for something. And another thing that I'd like to add is that, you know, this is not about individual police officers. This is a systemic institutional problem, as was brought out earlier. This is seen all over the country, and it's also generational. This is not new. And I know it's difficult for folks who are looking at numbers without to be able to specifically say that it's about race. But as a black person, I can tell you what it feels like in the community. And it definitely feels like it's more than a feeling, that we know that it's about race.
James?
Frank, just to add, one of the things that quite often happens in these traffic stops, particularly if the officer is playing some hunch that a person may have drugs. Now, what that hunch is based upon is quite often just that, in some cases just a hunch. But what quite often happens, and I've heard a number of young black males tell me this, they're taken out of their car. They are handcuffed. They are sat on the curb on public display. A drug dog is called out. The insides of their car is torn apart looking for whatever, and quite often nothing is found. It has to be an extremely humiliating experience to go through that. And I've talked to quite a few individuals who have experienced that sort of behavior.
Well, I'd have to imagine that there's a dynamic that is in play here. If you're a trained police officer looking at body language, tension, various signs for dangerous behavior, and you, on the other hand, in the car are somebody who's expecting to be pulled over and handcuffed because it happens all too often, you may just adopt the very posture that the police officer is looking at. It seems to me like a self-perpetuating dynamic that once it gets started, everybody says, well, it looks suspicious to me. And the guy said, I'm getting pulled over for nothing.
Well, that may be a factor, but I do think the critical factor initially is, was there a legitimate reason for the stop in the first place, and is there either probable cause or reasonable suspicion to take it to the next level, to handcuff a person, to go into their personal property, you know, looking for drugs or whatever the case may be. And based upon the analysis, we do have a sense that statistically speaking, it does happen disproportionately to people of color. One of the things that we haven't mentioned is that there are certain counties or localities where the disparities are much more stark than the, the 0.77% that we've talked about earlier.
And where's that?
Well, one county is Cabarrus County. The numbers there, and Frank can talk about that in more detail, because what he did in the analysis is to sort of break out counties that figured into like the 10 lowest areas of disparity, and then counties that figured that were the 10 highest. And I think Cabarrus County ranked highest in most of the categories.
Well, actually, Frank, I've got about 30 seconds left. If you can characterize, is there a particular region that stands out?
I would just say that what James says is absolutely right. There are certain counties that stand out. I don't think we could say there's a region of the state that stands out, but Cabarrus County was quite substantial, where, you know, it's more than double. In some of the categories, it's more than double the statewide average for that racial disparity.
All right. And very quickly, did age play much of a factor?
You know, surprisingly, when we looked at the data, age was not as much as a factor as we expected until you get about over the age of 55.
And then it drops off.
Then it does drop off. But it's... That was longer than we expected.
All right. Well, I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. Frank Baumgartner is a professor of political science at UNC Chapel Hill. James E. Williams, public defender in Orange County, leads the North Carolina Advocates for Justice Task Force on Racial and Ethnic Bias. Nia Wilson is executive director of Spirit House, co-creator of a play called Collective Sun. Thank you all for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's more to come on The State of Things. Stay with us. Can technology go too far in preventing criminal behavior? We'll find out in a moment. Stay tuned.